Memoirs of the Reverend William C. Burns, Chapter 10, 1844 to 1846, Canada. Footnote: this chapter was kindly prepared by the late Reverend Robert Burns, D.D., Professor of Theology at Knox College, Toronto, than whom none knew the field of labor better, or had done more to advance the work of Christ throughout its length and breadth. It is given with only such revision as the revered author would himself have given to it, had he been spared to impart to it his final touch. Besides him, and chiefly through him, I am indebted also to the following friends who have assisted in furnishing the materials on which the narrative is based. This, Reverend Alexander Cameron of the Free Church, and many others listed. End of the footnote. Our North American colonies had something like a heredity claim on the services of Mr. Burns. It has been the lot of two of his near relatives to be engaged for services of years in the service of a church in that important and thriving province of the British Crown. His uncle, Dr. George Burns of the Free Church at CORSTORPHINE, was in 1817 called to be the first minister of the Church of Scotland in the city of St. John, New Brunswick, and with a short interval, he labored in that important sphere for the period of 14 years, while another uncle, Dr. Robert Burns, formerly Paisley, was for 15 years secretary to the Glasgow Society for sending out ministers and teachers to the colonies of British North America, and was himself for a quarter of a century employed, first as pastor and afterwards as theological professor at Toronto and Canada West, the latter having arrived at Montreal in the spring of 1844 as one of the first deputies of the young, fresh, and already renowned Free Church of Scotland. The question was at once put to him, "Have you brought your nephew with you?" In fact, the revivals in Scotland were more spoken of in Canada than in Scotland itself, and the Free Church deputy carried him home with him earnest commissions from the good people of Quebec, Montreal, Kingston, Toronto, and almost everywhere for the presence and labors of Mr. Burns and others of similar spirit. Written communications to the colony committee at Edinburgh had also preceded him, and when he reached Scotland in June of that year, he found that the proposal to visit Canada had been made to Mr. Burns, and that proposal having been seconded by the full information now given him, all difficulties were removed, and in the course of a few weeks, Mr. Burns embarked in the Brig Mary for Montreal. A free passage to and from Canada, having been guaranteed to him by the generous Christian proprietors of the vessel. Mr. Burns sailed from Greenock to Montreal on the 10th August, 1844, and reached Montreal on Thursday, September 26th of the same year. In this connection, the names of Mr. James R. Orr, merchant of Montreal, and of Captain Kelso, the commander and proprietor of the vessel, deserve honorable mention. With the first of these gentlemen, Mr. Burns stayed during the greater part of his residence in Montreal. The names of both are associated with the first perpetual dawning of the new church era in Canada. The following extracts from his journal will show the feelings with which he approached his new sphere of labor and the spirit in which he entered on it. "At every circumstance, even to the least, I have seen infinite grace towards me on this occasion. The ship in which I am is an excellent one. As there is no cabin passenger but myself, I have a cabin as quiet as my own study could be, and a stateroom in which to meet with God. The means provided for me by the Lord have so exactly met my wants that I go forth truly without purse, having only 2 shillings remaining in the world, and yet I am infinitely rich, having nothing and yet possessing all things. I trust I shall be enabled not only to pray much, but also to study much deeply the divine word, and prepare more regularly for the profitable discharge of my awful trust. I have got some beginning made among the crew. Tonight we had fine weather and met on deck for worship. It was sweet and solemn, and the voice of prayer and praise blending with the winds in the midst of the mighty deep. Oh, that I may be prepared for glorifying God fully in my body and spirit, which are His. Oh, on another occasion he says, today we have then becalmed, and I feel the retirement sweet. I think I can say through grace that God's presence or absence alone distinguishes places to me. But I am yet untried. I know but little of what is in me as yet, and still less of the depth of His redeeming love. I have sometimes had glimpses both of the depth of sin and of redeeming love. Still, I will need very special teaching if I am to be of use in the Western world. September 2, 1844. This morning, beautifully clear, a gentle northeast breeze, wafering us to our desired haven, brought us in sight of American land after a delightful run of 23 days. Our seasons of divine worship have been increasingly pleasant of late, although I see no mark of a divine work of grace in anyone around me. Part of my daily work has been to teach the ship boys to read. One of them is an interesting black from Africa. Oh, that my heart were enlarged in pleading for the ingathering of all nations to Emmanuel. On September the 10th, we reached Quebec, and in his journal we find the following characteristic notice. In God's great mercy, we arrived here yesterday after a delightful passage of 36 days. As it was the day of holy rest, I did not go ashore, but had worship on board and spoke on the 22nd chapter of Revelations. In the evening, I was put on shore, and after looking a little at the aspect of the town, I took up my position alone, and yet not alone, at the marketplace close to the river, and began to repeat the 55th of Isaiah. A crowd of Canadians and of British soldiers soon gathered, who at first seemed mute with astonishment, but soon showed me that the offense of the cross had not ceased by their mocking and threatened violence. However, I got a good opportunity of witness bearing for Christ, for God in His Christ, and when I left them, had some interesting conversations with some individuals who followed me. When I came down again at 8:30 to the place where the ship's boat was to meet me, I got into conversation with a company of young sailors, two of whom remembered well having heard me at Newcastle at the quay and in the corn market. Some of our poor soldiers and sailors were going about intoxicated. Though it were only to reach these two classes of degraded men, it would be to me a reward for crossing the great ocean. Who knoweth what may be the fruit of this evening's testimony among the wondering crowd? I have had on board this ship a time for solemn observation of the character and ways of the unconverted, which I trust will be profitable. The only book I have had with me besides the Book of God is Owen on the Glory of Christ, which I find precious indeed. I have had some seasons of great nearness to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ and have found His Word full of power and refreshment. On reaching Montreal, he at once found himself in the midst both of new and of old friends. The faces of the old soldiers whom he had known in Aberdeen and at Dundee must have been a sight peculiarly pleasant to him and a happy omen for the future. When we came into the harbor, two Christian gentlemen, Mr. Ward and Mr. McKay, came on board, and before leaving my little cabin, we had sweet communion at the mercy seat together. I lived with Mr. and Mrs. Orr, a godly couple from Greenock, in a delightful situation at the head of the town. Truly goodness and mercy are heaped on me. Before leaving Scotland, I observed that the 93rd Regiment, the depot of which I labored among at Aberdeen in autumn 1840, had removed from Kingston to Montreal, and I trusted that somehow I might get in among them. But what was my joy and wonder to be told that there were about 30 godly men among sergeants and privates who had a hired room near the barracks, in which some of them teach a daily school for poor children gathered from the streets, as well as Sabbath school, and in which they meet for social prayer every Friday from 6 to 8:30. This is the Sutherland Regiment, of which in its early days the Reverend Ronald Blaine, an eminent man of God, afterwards at Inverness and then at Elgin, was chaplain, and that enjoyed until lately the command of Colonel McGregor, a distinguished Christian officer, now at the head of the Constabulary Force of Dublin. I had hardly arrived when I was told they were looking with desire to my coming, and that they wished me to attend their prayer meeting and to preach to them next Sabbath. I accordingly went last night in company of two pious Scotsmen. When we got to the place, I found such a scene as I never before saw, a room crowded with soldiers, wives, and children, who were met not to hear a man speak, but to wait upon Jehovah, as their custom was. It put me in mind of the centurion of old. I enjoyed the meeting exceedingly, speaking upon Moses at the burning bush. One of the soldiers prayed, as well as Mr. McIntosh and myself. In the soldier's prayer, I was struck by the petition that they might cherish such expectations of good through my instrumentality as were warranted by his word and were according to his mind. They seemed all to feel, too, that nothing but the presence of God himself would be of any avail. I found it very affecting to them and me to allude to the church of our fathers in the furnace and to the people of Wallace and Sutherland, from among whom the regiment was at first raised. Tuesday, September 24th, Sabbath, was a good day, sufficient to remind me of the September 22nd, 1839, the day of the Second Communion at Kilsyth. At 9:30 a.m., I preached on the quay, on the entrance of Jesus into Jerusalem, and aspersed the temple, congregation large and fixed. At 11, I preached in Mr. Wilkes' church, congregational, from the words, "When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord shall lift up a standard against him." At 1:30 p.m., I addressed the 93rd Regiment and Mr. Essen's church, very fixed in their attention, more so than I had seen soldiers before. At 7, I again preached in Mr. Essen's to a full church on "If any man will come after me," etc., and much more aided. Saturday, December 14th. During the present week, my work has gone on as before, but in addition, my conflicts in soul about it have been deeper than before, and several new doors have been opened. 1, 250 of the 71st Regiment have come to the cavalry barracks, whom I visited on Tuesday and Friday, and whom I am to see again on Tuesday if the Lord will. It seems very remarkable that the 93rd and 71st Regiment are the only ones whose depots I visited in Scotland, and that the whole of the 93rd and so many of the 71st should now be here. I have met with a number of the 71st, whom I knew well in Dundee, and this prepares my way among them. 2, I have got liberty, and more than liberty, from the commanding officer of the 89th Irish Regiment to meet with the men in their schoolroom from week to week. This seems so unlikely, as he is said to be a Romish, that I had given up thought of applying, but one of the men in the hospital wanted me to ask a favor for him, and this gave me an introduction. 3, we have got most wonderfully the use of a large room exactly opposite the French church for holding meetings in, both in French and English, all for nothing, the owner being a friend of the gospel, a hearer of Dr. Carruthers the Independent, whose church met for a long time in this very place. This seems a remarkable arrangement, as it is the very best place in the city for reaching the people. When the Free Church was opened at Cott Street, Montreal, the soldiers of the 93rd had a distant service allotted to them in the afternoon. On the arrival of Mr. Burns, this service devolved on him, but besides preaching to the entire regiment on the Sabbath, he preached twice during the week in one of the largest rooms in the barracks, and he went frequently to the regimental hospital to address the sick and speak to the patients personally. Such was the high estimation in which he was held by soldiers, both of that and of other regiments and of different denominations, that on several occasions when men of the regiment were sick, Englishmen and Irishmen, Episcopalians and Roman Catholics, have sent to him earnest messages soliciting his visits and his prayers. To quote the words of Mr. Rector McFarson, then Sergeant Major of the band of the regiment, "I shall never forget the first sermon he preached on the first Sabbath after his arrival. He gave out in the usual way the 32nd Psalm to be sung and had read the first four lines when he began to unfold the feelings and experience of a penitent believer in a way, to me at least, never opened before nor since, and which was to my afflicted spirit as good news from a far land. It was like oil and wine to my afflicted spirit. It was also greatly blessed to others of my fellow soldiers. The man of God continued to address us in much freedom of heart and of power for 3 hours, concluding somewhat abruptly, but with words which indicated a spirit of winning affection to everyone. I see your time is up, but I hope to have further opportunities of addressing you, and solemnly pronounce the apostolic benediction. The many opportunities of hearing Mr. B, enjoyed by the men of the 93rd Regiment, were eagerly improved by them, and the following description of the bearing of his preaching upon them, and which has been drawn out by one of themselves, then a non-commissioned officer, is singularly graphic. I have known the Reverend W.C.B. to send his famous regiment, these heroes of BALACLAVA, home to their barracks after hearing him preach, every man of them less or more affected. Not a high word or breath or whisper heard among them, each man looking more serious than his comrade, awestruck, like men that dreamed they were, and when at home, dismissed from parade, they could not dismiss their fears. Out of 30 men, the subdivision of a company under my charge, living in the same room, only 5 were bold enough that Sunday evening to go out to their usual haunts, and these must go afraid, as if by steel. Their conscience will trouble them, and the other 25, each with Bible in hand, bemoaning himself. Now, looking at the whole regiment from what took place in this one room of it, you may be able to judge of Mr. B's power as an ambassador of Christ with clear credentials. While in the city of Montreal and freely proclaiming the riches of grace in churches and barrack rooms and hospitals, Mr. Burns found the field too narrow, and he went out to the highways and streets and squares of the city, which was the special scene of his apostolic labors. For the first 2 or 3 nights, there was little opposition, but the majority of his hearers being Roman Catholics, the priests were made aware of what was going on and became alarmed, and violent opposition was the issue. He never intended to use the word popery, nor any term directly marking the system or calculated to give needless offense, but his finger, it would seem, touched the sore parts of the malady, and the effect was just as of old when the man had turned the world upside down, were assailing the strongholds of the heathen superstition and sin. He writes in his journal, Tuesday, September 24th, evening at 7 in open air in Place d'Armes, in the center of the city, in front of the great Roman cathedral. The proposal of this tried some spirits among us. When I went, a considerable number had assembled, and among them a band of the 93rd. I had a fine opportunity and felt the power of the living God with us. Towards the end, our enemies made a commotion. The mayor of the city, a Roman Catholic, came to stop me, but was restrained by God. As we retired about 9:30, we were mobbed, chiefly as usual, through the excessive fears of friends seeking to guard me from violence. The mayor offered his protection, but I said to the people in his presence, "No one will harm me. It is my own friends who are creating groundless alarm. I would ask all to go home quietly, and if anyone is my enemy, he will give me his arm and we will go together." They quietly moved away. I put my hand on my white neckcloth and moved on, unknown to the multitude. If the kingdom of Satan is to be disturbed here, this is but the shadow of what will yet come, and then shall many be offended. Friday, September 27th, at 5:30, in Place d'Armes, awfully mocked and pelted. Though with nothing deadly, yet got much truth delivered both while here and after going to an adjoining street where a gentleman walking with me was struck on the back. While in the Place d'Armes, one of the magistrates, eventually I think a Romanist, came and ordered me to remove, threatening me with the exercise of his power if I did not. I said I was doing no harm and would continue, and that he might take me to prison if he pleased. I was ready. He shrunk away and left me to go on. I feel that standing thus in the breach, though it may have no other effect, invigorates my own faith, leaves a testimony honoring to God, and sets me on a high vantage ground in preaching in the churches. Saturday, September 28th, This evening I was again in the field about 6 o'clock. A great number assembled, and in contrast with the previous night, they seemed to have ears given them to hear. This continued for some time, but afterwards they began to throw gravel, etc., and to joust me in the crowd. Little evil might have come of this, had not some who befriend me as a Scotman sought to save me from danger. And thus my back being turned, the crowd rushed on me, and I got away without my hat and one of the tails of my coat containing a handkerchief and the Bible. Their enmity was so great that I believe the Bible was torn in pieces as well as the rest, the hat only being recovered. I got into a shop where many who trembled for me would have had me to remain, but I was quite above all fear, and went out again alone among the people, and got much opportunity of declaring the truth on the way home. Surely these displays of enmity are a token that the Prince of Darkness is in some degree afraid. These furious onsets are described by eyewitnesses as having been most terrible, and as having more than once threatened serious consequences. Thus, on one occasion that I evidently referred to in one of the above extracts, his coat was torn, his hat was knocked off and trampled on the ground, and his pocket Bible, his constant companion, torn from his hand. On the other, a stone thrown with violence inflicted a severe wound on his chest, and it bled freely. A few of the 93rd rushed through the crowd, and one in anxiety said, "What is this? What is this?" Smiling, he replied, "Never mind, it's only a few scars in my master's service." He was carried into the medical chambers of Dr. MacNeeder, near at hand, when that beloved Christian physician skillfully sewed up the wound. He came forth speedily, as if nothing had taken place, and looking around calmly from his reassumed position, he exclaimed in the words of the great apostle of the Gentiles, "I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus." Another hot day of battle is thus vividly described by the Reverend William Arnott of the Free High Church, Edinburgh, who happened to be in Montreal at the same time, and who himself bravely joined him on the forlorn hope. "Once," he writes, "I went with him to the Haymarket Square, where he meant to preach in English. I went somewhat anxious for his safety, with intent to help him if need should arise. A circle soon gathered. He began to preach. More assembled outside. Thicker and thicker, the girdle grew, but the roughest were outside. William and I stood alone in the middle of the ring, heads very closely in, but the gentlest nearest us. Where they stood at first, they remained. No possibility of movement. Noise and throwing of dirt increased. When he became somewhat wearied, I now and then took up the address, and the change of voice operated a little in our favor for getting a hearing. One Irish voice from the outside interrupted William at one time, shouting clear over all the din, "The devil's dead." A great laugh followed. When it hushed, William struck in with a plaintive voice tinged almost with the sarcastic, "Ah, then you are a poor fatherless child." This raised a laugh in his favor, and under cover of it, he wasn't able to proceed for a while. We were besmeared with mud thrown from the outer circles, but not hurt. The violent opposition of the Irish, however, evidently drove him off. He desisted, as the first missionaries did, when the persecution became violent, and went to another city. At length, the hostile Romish mayor was replaced in his office by another of different spirit, an excellent Protestant gentleman of the Wesleyan body, who lent the full weight of his authority and moral support to the cause of order and of peace. Appearing seasonably at one of the meetings where tumultuous disturbances were apprehended, he speedily succeeded in calming the storm, and the assembly soon dispersed without injury to anyone. Thereafter, he waited on Mr. Burns for consultation on the case. "As soon as he has stated the object of his visit," said Mr. Burns, "let us pray." When, as they knelt together, he touched the mayor on the shoulder and said, "You'll pray." He did pray, asking the divine direction, and a blessing on the labors of Mr. Burns, and left him with a single request, that he would send him notice when and where he would next preach. The city of Montreal was only one, though perhaps the most important scene, of Mr. Burns' Canadian labors. His mission was to the whole Dominion of Canada, which may be considered now as including, or as designed to include, all the dependencies of the British Crown in North America. In 1844, the name embraced only two branches of one province, Canada East and Canada West, the former being now termed the Province of Quebec, and the later that of Ontario. Lower Canada was then, as it had been for ages and still is, settled by the French Canadians, speaking a French language, and subject to debasing superstition and a dominant priestcraft. The whole land groans under the tyranny sway of perhaps the most wealthy and powerful hierarchy under the dominion of the See of Rome. We have no doubt that in seeing their splendid palaces, their magnificent cathedrals, colleges, and convents, and seeing the lovely land almost wholly given to idolatry, the spirit of Mr. Burns was greatly stirred within him. Hence the interest he took all the time he was in Canada in the state of the poor inhabitants, the benighted French, Canadian, Roman Catholics, and hence the avidity and success with which, as we shall presently see, he revived his knowledge of the French language so as to be able, in a comparatively short space of time, to speak intelligently and fluently in the French tongue. Canadian West, or Ontario, as it is now called, may be termed a Protestant country, inhabited too, no doubt, by many Roman Catholics, especially from Ireland, and by not a few settlers from Germany and the United States. But unquestionably, the English and the Scottish elements greatly preponderate. The leading Protestant denominations are Episcopalians, Presbyterians, Methodists, Baptists, and Congregationalists. Of these, the first three are each nearly equal in point of numbers, amounting to not much less than 1 million in all. The population of the whole Dominion, including Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, is estimated at 4 million. Prior to the era of the disruption in 1843, the state of our countrymen in Canada was anything but promising. The framework of the Presbyterian Church was indeed set up, and a number of pious ministers had been from time to time sent out, both by the establishment and the succession. And the annuals of the early Presbyterian Church are adorned with a few noble names. Generally speaking, however, the system was cold, formal, and stiff, and spiritual religion in the line of Scottish Presbyterian was low. The disruption wrought wonders for Canada. Many pious men in the cities and in the land generally sighed for a change, and the arrival of deputies from the Free Church in regular successions for 5 years formed quite a new era in the religious history of the province. No Protestant missionary can be useful to any great extent in Lower Canada who is not able to converse and preach in the French language. And Mr. Burns very soon felt the necessity of revisiting his attainment in that direction. So successful was he in this that he not only addressed the habitants regularly in their own language, but seemingly with the view of acquiring still greater faculty in the use of it. He wrote a large proportion of his Canadian journal in the French language. After a second visit of a few days in Quebec, where it will be remembered, he first opened his commission as a herald of the cross on American ground. He was invited to visit Leeds and the Gaelic district of Inverness settlements, about 50 miles from the city. It was on this occasion he revived his knowledge of the Gaelic language, already somewhat familiar to him from his visits in the Highlands of Perthshire, and the raftsmen who were his fellow voyagers on the St. Lawrence were valuable assistants to him in this work, while he imparted to them the rich treasures of evangelistic truths. The settlers at Inverness heard from his lips the glorious gospel in the language most familiar to them, and the blessed results were deep and lasting. When Mr. Clark of Quebec and Dr. Burns of Toronto visited the same place in 1863, they found a fresh revival of religion, especially marked by distant memorials of the early labors of Mr. Burns. The visit of these gentlemen was in the midst of harvest, but the laborers, eager to hear, found 2 hours at midday, besides 2 hours in the evening, to wait on the preaching of the word. The following notices from an intelligent correspondence afford some interesting glimpses of his labors elsewhere. At Williamstown, where the church was denied him by the minister and session, the innkeeper readily allowed Mr. Burns to preach under his roof to a very respectable audience of attentive listeners. At Lochiel, he stood in a wagon by the roadside and freely proclaimed the glad tidings of salvation. One of his hearers, against his wishes, holding an umbrella over his head to protect him from the scorching rays of a Canadian sun. In the afternoon, he preached in a barn from Psalms 17, verse 8, which sermon was blessed for the conversion of one individual, who is now one of the principal elders of the Free Church there. In Kenyon, he preached in English, but many of the Gaelic people wanted to hear him. A pious old woman who understood no English was asked why she remained. She replied, "I thought it would be a privilege to be included in that dear minister's prayers. And another thing did me good. He seemed to dwell particularly on one word, spoke in such sweet tones, it sent a glow to my heart. The word salvation, what does that mean?" During the communication services at Indian Lands, where his labors of a precious visit have been blessed to many, he preached for several successive days to the crowds of eager listeners who with one accord declared they had never heard such glorious truths. In addressing the communicants, one of his persuasive remarks was, "If you cannot come in by the saint's door, oh, come in by the sinner's." A poor idiot who had been present remained after the congregation dispersed and walked around a small tent where Mr. Burns still lingered, engaged in prayer, several times exclaiming, "You touched my heart, you touched my heart." Mr. B's attention was attracted to him. One of the people told him not to mind the man, he was a fool. One of Christ's fools, perhaps, which rebuked the man, learning that there was a small colony of French Canadians several miles distance, he immediately decided upon visiting them, and having first addressed the English people of the place, in a gristmill, he then preached to the French quite fluently in their own language. They listened as if spellbound. He afterwards conversed with them individually in fluent French, and they united in saying he was the best priest they ever heard speaking. In moving from place to place on his evangelistic tours in the country districts, Mr. Burns did not often avail himself of the conveyance readily provided by friends, but if at all possible, would invariably travel on foot, so as to avail himself to the opportunity afforded in this way of speaking a word in season and out of season to groups of laborers working in the fields, or anyone whom he happened to meet traveling on the highway. It is only those who have been in Canada that can know how trying, and therefore how rare, such foot traveling must be, owing to the extremes of heat and cold and the rude state of the roads. When going on long journeys and obliged to sail on the lakes, it was his constant practice to preach on board the steamers to all who might be disposed to hear him. On these occasions, he more particularly addressed himself to the deck passengers, usually composed of immigrants and persons of the laboring or of the poorer classes. The calm and peaceful surface of the expanding lake and the even flow of the mighty rivers greatly favored such evangelistic efforts. The more intelligent and respectable managers of such conveyances encouraged these efforts by granting a free passage, and there cannot be a doubt that such unrequited and humble method of doing good have been frequently owed by a blessing from on high. If Mr. Burns was known afterwards in China as the man of the book, he was equally so known in Canada as well as in his native land. The following short sketch taken from his journal may give some idea of the variety and extent of his labors as a missionary in Canada West, while it embraces also places visited by him within the line of East or Lower Canada. I have preached at St. Eustache LACHUTE, St. Andrews, Hawks, Berry, L Original, and VANKELEEKHILL. And yesterday evening I preached twice in French, but these meetings have not been large. Cornwall, Saturday, July 26, 1845. In the course of these last weeks, I have preached often in English and in French at LOCHIEL, Indian Lands, Kenan, Roxbury, Finch, Martintown, Williamstown, Lancaster, etc. I have had 9 little French meetings since the last date. In general, they were well disposed to listen to the word. Some of our English meetings have been very large and serious, but alas, the spiritual deadness of this country is very great. It became at last necessary for me to bear a distinct testimony to the providence of the Free Church. The report of the proceedings of the Assembly of that church is interesting. Their prosperity in an external point of view is very remarkable. May their spiritual prosperity be in proportion. There was formerly at Martintown, near this, a true minister of Jesus Christ named Connell, who appears to have been the means of saving many souls. He died 10 years ago, but his memory is blessed, as it is that of all the just. After having preached at Cornwall and further down on the shores of the St. Lawrence, I crossed the Salmon River to Dundee, quite near New York State, and from that place I preached as I went along towards Montreal, where I arrived last Thursday, having visited on my way Fort Covington in New York State, El Riviere de Loup, Lake Strove, Huntingdon, St. Michael's, Durham, North Georgetown. Sometimes I have been a little encouraged, but in a general spiritual religion, which alone saves the human soul, appears to be very rare. Nonetheless, I have met with some people who seem to love the Lord. Yesterday, I tried again to preach out of doors, but with little success. They stoned or pelted me with mud, but by the grace of God, I escaped danger. One poor man in the crowd recognized me as the person whom he had seen beaten at Dublin near the custom house. Although a rumor, she appeared yesterday much disposed to listen to the word, and his testimony in my favor will be undoubtedly useful among his countrymen. After a fortnight's labor at Bytown, near the city of Ottawa, where Mr. Wardrobe, the excellent minister there, had been recently settled, he visited Bristol, Perth, Lanark, and several other cities. At this last place he remained, Kenton, some weeks, and besides supplying the Free Church there, he preached 7 times to the soldiers of the 71st Regiment, whom he had formerly seen. The principal officer gave him liberty to do so, and this he so devotedly notices as a proof of encouragement from God. He preached also in the country all around, particularly GANANOQUEGLENBURNIE, and 2 other places, meeting everywhere with encouragement, more or less. He visited also COBOURGBELLEVILLE and other places adjacent, such as Timorsville, Pecan, and Napolis. While at Kingston, he received through Dr. Begg, who had come out as a deputy from the Free Church, a letter inviting him to visit France. The impression on his mind by this circumstance is thus noted in his journal. Perhaps the Lord intends to call me thither to bear testimony to the truth. May his will be done. Nevertheless, I must go to the other part of his providence, to London, for example, and its vicinity. He then adverts to his visit to and missionary labors from at Fredensburg, Peterborough, OTTONABEE, Port Hope, Clark, Newcastle, Toronto, Nigeria, NIGARA, Streetsville, and ESQUESING. Preaching, as he says, everywhere the Word of God, which liveth and endureth forever. At Toronto, he says, I had much pleasure in meeting with the young men who are at college preparing for the work of the ministry. There are some among them who seem to be true Christians, and they are all making satisfactory progress in their studies. In the summer of 1846, he visited a considerable portion of the Western Territory, preaching at Oakville, Wellington Square, Hamilton, London, St. Thomas, Williams, Lobo, South, W-O-L-D, Dunwich, Edinburgh, Mora, Eckford, Chatham, Amherstburg, near the borderline, Detroit in the United States, and Port Smyrna, meeting everywhere with encouragement. At Amherstburg, he preached to a congregation of blacks, former slaves, who interested him much. At Smyrna, S-A-R-N-I-A, he preached by means of an interpreter to an interesting assembly of American Indians who were under the instruction of the Methodist missionaries. And, as might have been expected, the meeting and exercises were very solemn and edifying. 2 months' labors were bestowed on Imperial, Woodstock, Beachville, Bradford, Lower Stratford, etc. In 1846, most of the places visited by Mr. Burns in Canada West were as yet unsupplied either with free church or ministers, and his labors and varied ministrations were singly blessed of God by means of uniting and quickening the members. Among the ministers whom he found settled in those parts, we notice the names of Monsignor Wardrop Graham and M-A-C-A-L-E-S-T-E-R, all of whom often spoke of the great refreshing and spiritual edification enjoyed by them and their people from his visits. Of the laborers also are the Free Church deputies, particularly Dr. Bernard, Mr. Arnott, Mr. Somerville, and Mr. M-U-N-R-O. He speaks with great interest. These were the ministers who had the charge of the Free Church congregation at COTE Street, Montreal, during his residency in Canada, and each of them appreciated the value of his labors and readily took part with him in them. Among the varied testimonies we have received to the good effect of the visits of Mr. Burns to Canada, one of the most valuable is that of the Reverend Alexander Cameron of A-R-D-E-R-S-I-E-R, whose opportunities of information were peculiarly favorable. It was my lot, says he, shortly after the return of Mr. Burns from Canada, to labor among the Highlanders of Glengarry for some years until health failed. I found the people in a very interesting state of mind, many of them cherishing a tenderness of conscience and a brokenness of spirit and thirsting eagerly for the word of life. Some of all ages were in this condition, but especially young men and young women. The crowds that congregated on the Sabbaths at L-O-C-H-I-E-L, the most central station at which I preached, were sometimes very great. In the district of Glengarry, where there are now 7 or 8 ministers, there was then only one, Mr. Daniel Clark of Indian Lands, and myself. Consequently, the people came from all quarters, traveling 5, 10, and even 20 miles and upwards. Many of them started on the Saturday so as to be forward in time for the morning service. The poor Roman Catholics, observing all this, thought the heads of their Protestant neighbors were turned. In one sense, it was easy to preach to these thirsty souls, for the word of God was precious in those days. It was the same wherever I went, no matter where sermon was imitated to be preached. In any schoolroom or district, the place would be crowded, even although such meetings were continued in different places nearly the whole week, as sometimes happened in winter. And often a few of the more ardent spirits would attend all these meetings, traveling from place to place for this purpose. The face of things began gradually but steadily to change. Old customs and inveterated habits were one by one abandoned. Balls and merrymakings and New Year's festivals, so frequent in that country, were fast disappearing. Some of the leaders in such things, with their own hands, cast their fiddles and bagpipes into the fire. And instead of the sounds of reverie, the voice of praise and spiritual melody began to be heard in their dwellings. Zion was, meanwhile, putting on her beautiful garments. Communion seasons were now more like those of old, F-E-R-I-N-T-O-S-H, than the former scanty gatherings in the backwoods. In this state of things, I ascribe chiefly under God to the labors of Mr. Burns. Doubtless, many other able and excellent men, especially some from the Free Church at home, labored faithfully and, I believe, successfully in Glengarry. But the visit of Mr. Burns, in my estimation, was the crowning visit, and the impression produced by his preaching and his godly demeanor was deep, pervasive, and abiding. The great day alone shall fully declare it. The following sketch under the hand of an intelligent office bearer of our church in Glengarry, at whose house Mr. Burns sojourned, and by whom he was conducted on his missionary way, may illustrate the obstacles which stand in the way of itinerating labor in Canada, and the manner in which they were met and conquered by Mr. Burns. A furious snowstorm having come on, he was detained for a week, and the state of the roads prevented any public meetings being held. But he improved the time by conversing on matters pertaining to the kingdom with our household, including farm servants, among whom were several French Canadians. We found him remarkably agreeable and sociable as a guest, entertaining us with incidents relative to his labors in Ireland and those parts of Scotland where revival have taken place. The recital of instances connected with such themes always caused his countenance to beam with a heavenly joy. Much of his time also was spent in retirement and over his Bible, which he often carried to the table at mealtime, referring to it whenever a pause in the conversation gave him an opportunity. Having an appointment to preach in the Congregational Chapel, Indian Land, so soon as the snowstorm subsided, he and I made a desperate effort to fulfill the engagement. Taking a powerful team of horses and a strong sled, we found the roads in an almost impassable state, the horses floundering in the snow, which in some places almost hid them from our view, and in other places they were incapable of moving forward one step, till I got out and made a track before them. In remarking on the state of the roads, I happened to say, "This is awful," but was instantly checked by my dear fellow traveler saying, "Oh, my dear sir, there is nothing awful but the wrath of God." Although traveling at the rate of only 1 mile an hour, we arrived at our destination in due time, where we found a goodly number assembled, and he delivered an impressive sermon, taking for illustration things that he had noticed along our route, such as the clearance in the forest with the other usual symptoms of progress in the settlement. References having been made more than once made to the services of the deputies from the Free Church to Canada, it may not be unsuitable to insert the following notices from one of the friends who have contributed materials for this chapter. When I arrived in Montreal in 1842, the spiritual condition of the three congregations were deplorably low, and with very few exceptions, it was so throughout the country. But I made special reference to Montreal, where there were a very few, like the gleanings of the vintage, who were longing and waiting for the salvation of Zion. These few were led to unite in prayer to the exalted head of the church to hasten his coming, by whom he would, and he was graciously pleased to hear their cry and send his servants. The first was Dr. Burns of Paisley, whose first sermon was from Revelations 1:17 and 18. To some, this sermon was the fulfillment of the promise, when the poor and needy seek water, etc. I think Dr. Burns was followed by Mr. John Bernard, afterwards Dr. Bernard, full of love and meekness and wisdom and undaunted courage. He was preeminently honored of God in gathering and uniting the scattered sheep and in organizing the Cut Street congregation and indeed of advancing the interests of the church throughout the whole province. In his arrival was beautifully seen the majestic going forth of him who is wonderful in counsel. Mr. Bernard was succeeded by other eminent servants of God, whose special mission was to supply the Cut Street congregation, which was then the great center of the Free Church in Canada. Among these may be specially noted Mr. Arnott, then of Glasgow, now of the Free High Church, Edinburgh, Mr. Somerville, of Anderston, Glasgow, Mr. Munro, M-U-N-R-O, of Rutherglen, Mr. McNaughton of Paisley, now Belfast, Mr. Buchanan of Bothwell, Mr. Brimner of Glasgow, Professor King, now of Halifax, Nova Scotia, Mr. Lewis of Leith, afterwards of Rome, Mr. J.C. Burns of Kirkliston, Mr. Cooper of Burns, Tisland, Mr. Begg of Edinburgh, Mr. Patterson of T-R-A-N-E-N-T, the late Mr. Cavan of B-A-R-A-E-M-A-R, who during periods more or less extended, labored in the cities and occasionally in the rural districts to the edifying of the multitudes of hearers and to the effect of laying firm and deep the foundations of what in its character as a united church may now with perfect propriety be called the Free Presbyterian Church of Canada. Mr. Burns returned to Scotland after about 2 years of incessant labor in Canada in the same vessel on which he had before sailed for the West, arriving in Glasgow on the 15th September 1846. He was still in vigorous health, yet showing but two evident traces of his exhausting and peculiarly trying scenes, which he had passed through. The clear tones of a voice of more than ordinary compass and power were gone. His mind and spirit were worn and jaded, and he had already begun to acquire a certain aged look, which he never afterwards wholly lost. He had indeed, emphatically, endured hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ, and he bore the marks of it, more or less, to his grave. End of chapter 10, having been read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God.